Before They Were Our Mothers was conceived when Pat Nugent realized at her mother's funeral that she knew very little about her mother's life before her mother was her mother. She'd never asked. Her mother had never offered. Nugent deeply regretted missing the opportunity to know her mother more fully. To inspire other families to share personal history, she compiled an anthology of real-life stories about women before they were mothers. In addition to the first-person accounts, the new book, Before They Were Our Mothers, offers readers a personal glimpse of world events from the late 1800s to the mid-1900s, as written in that moment by current-day descendants. It is a pleasure to welcome Pat Nugent, who is the editor of this collection, to the program. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for being with us. Also, two of the contributors are with us as well. Sue Van Hook, wonderful to see you.
Thank you, Joe.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. And Crystal Hemelink is with us as well. Crystal, thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
So nice to have you. All right. So, Pat, how did this come to be, this project? I gave it in a nutshell, but for you, it was to, because there is that point where you say, okay, there's my story, but then there's also obviously a lot of other stories.
Yeah, you did a great summary in the beginning. This book started in my head in 2004, which you referenced at my mom's funeral, when a man brought photos and information about my mom that I didn't know. And I started talking to friends about my experience, and they began to tell me stories that they didn't know about their mothers. And in particular, I went with mothers because often women's voices are silenced or they don't have as many opportunities to tell their stories. So I went with the concept of what were these women's lives like before they had husbands and before they had children. The book Half Broke Horses by Jeanette Walls really showed me the power of storytelling in the first person.
Right.
So Jeanette wrote about her great-grandmother in her voice. And then as a writer of creative nonfiction, the power of writing in present tense also made an impression on me, as far as being in the moment and being in the immediate situation. So we have 15 stories that are written first person and present tense, which puts you right in the middle of these women's lives and gives you a sense of what it was like.
That idea of what it was like for their stories, what it was like at the time, what it was like for them that made them the person they are today, really all of the above, right?
Yes, all of the above. These stories, the title of the book is, the last part of it is Before Rosie Started Riveting. So these women lived in between the two waves of feminism, the first wave being Susan B. Anthony's movement for not just voting rights, but for equal rights for women, and then Gloria Steinem, certainly in the 60s. So these women were living in between the two waves, where we had kind of gotten a jump start over women beginning to gain status, but then not far enough, certainly.
There are many contributors to the book. Two of them are with us this morning. How did you find the people that you found?
I put out a call for submissions. New York State writers only, just to make it more manageable for me. I received a grant from Saratoga Arts, which got money from the New York State Council on the Arts. So the grant was to have 15 stories published, and so I sent out a call for submissions. Various organizations helped me do that, the New York State Writers Institute, the League of Women Voters, Adirondack Center for Writing, sent out notices, and I was delighted. We got twice as many as we were able to publish, and I'm thrilled to have two of the contributors here today who can talk about it was like on their end.
Okay, one last question for you, and then we'll get to them. But what were you looking for? Ultimately, what were you looking for?
I was looking for stories that were a snapshot of these women's lives. We did not want a chronology. So I was born in St. Mary's Hospital, and I died in St. Mary's Hospital. We wanted one glimpse of a segment of these women's lives to show us in an illustrative way a moment in time for these women, maybe a highlight, maybe a very sad time, as a representation of what these women were going through. And some of them are young girls in their stories. Some of them are women in their 30s who had not yet gotten married. And so there's a wide range of age groups that are represented in the book.
Again, the name of the book is Before They Were Our Mothers, Voices of Women Born Before Rosie Started Riveting. So, Crystal, tell us about the story, The Boys from the Trains, the story that you tell in the book.
The Boys from the Train is the story of my grandmother and my mother, who was 10 at the time, in the 1930s, at the early onset of the Great Depression, when 25% of Americans or more were out of work. And there were over 2 million boys and young men called hobos, mm-hmm. who were riding the trains across America, desperately looking for work and for money that they could send home to their families. My grandmother decided that she was going to feed the hobos. She decided this in the face of a lot of obstacles. They didn't have much money themselves. She was on a really tight budget just to survive with her family. And the town authorities didn't like the idea of hobos hopping off the train and coming to her house to eat. So in spite of those obstacles, she did begin feeding hobos. She learned a lot in the process. She learned about something called the Hobo Code, which was used nationwide. It was cryptic, almost like hieroglyphics. And the hobos would communicate with each other. Where could you eat in a town? Where could you sleep? This town is very hostile. Get back on the train immediately. There were over like 200 symbols that hobos used, and all the rest of Americans had no clue. They just thought it was graffiti. So she learned that. She and my mom learned individual stories of hobos that were really heartwarming and touching, and I included some of those in the book. And Grandma also had a huge confrontation with the town mayor and town officials when they ordered her to stop feeding the hobos, and she found a very creative way to not disobey the order and at the same time continuing to feed these homeless, hungry young men as long as it was needed through the rest of the Depression.
How did you find out the details of the story that you tell?
I never heard it from my grandmother. I live 4 hours away from her, so I only got to see her about 3 times a year, and I adored her, but she never really shared her personal stories. When I retired from state government, I started doing volunteer work in Schenectady, feeding the hungry. So one day I'm telling my mom about how much I enjoy feeding the hungry. My mother says, "It's genetic, you know." And so then she proceeds to tell me what it was like. My mom helped Grandma in feeding the kids, and she knew the stories that she had heard at the dinner table that the hobos were sharing. So Mom shared this.
And you just have to think that if you hadn't said that to her, you may never have heard that story.
Very likely, because by the time I heard that story, it was only about 10 years ago.
And it's so frustrating for those of us who have lost our parents that, maybe we even have heard the story or glimpses of the story or fragments of the story, but then when you think of it and they're gone, you go back to it and it's very mm-hmm. hard to remember it completely and then to know who to go to find it more completely. And that's a real challenge.
One of the things in the foreword to the book is I realize you can't Google your grandmother's first heartache.
Right.
You know, you just, unless you talk to these people in our lives while we still have them.
That's right.
Or people who knew them, these stories are gone forever.
And write it down. Write it down.
Right.
Sue, let's talk about the story that you tell in the book, which is, it is called Letter Never Sent. And this is about Dorothy. Tell us about Dorothy and the story.
Yes, Dorothy is my mother, and I did have the opportunity to have these conversations with her before her death, prompted by my therapist at the time. And so I had learned pieces of her early life before marriage. And one of the things I learned was about her mother, who I never got to know because she died of tuberculosis. At a young age. Actually, she lived with tuberculosis for 8 whole years, unexpectedly, largely because of her Christian Science faith. Mm. I wanted to honor my mother, and I wanted to honor my grandmother that I never knew, and yet there was tremendous tension in their relationship that my mother had shared with me. My grandmother apparently ruled the house, and part of me, my interest in researching this more was to understand, well, how did that happen? You know, how did she have the power in the household? And the prompt was, Pat challenged us to come up with a challenge that our mothers or grandmothers faced. And I had just received a series of letters scanned by my half-uncle, and one of them was a letter from my grandmother to my mother before she was marrying.
Oh, wow.
Basically telling my mother, suck it up, I want you to marry this guy. Several times in the letter. And so that was clearly the challenge that I chose to focus the piece on.
You know, I'm the youngest of five children. They're all boys. And I had a really great relationship with my mother, and we talked a lot, and she talked with all my other brothers. I bring this up because what I have found in my years on this planet is that the mother-daughter relationship is something that I will never, if I live to be 150, will understand. Now, and you sort of illustrate this, that it can be fraught. It can be a very complicated relationship, which I assume can then be a challenge when you are trying to get to the bottom of these stories.
If I were to identify a surprise I had when I finally put this book together, it was the number of women who expressed anger towards their mothers. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And it certainly isn't every story, but the mothers were often seen as the ones who were denying the opportunities to the girls for education or for work, perhaps because their own lives were so repressed. They were the ones saying, you don't need an education, you're only going to get married and have children. And either it was the mother simply delivering the message that came from the father, or she was seen as the obstacle, but that was a surprise to me. And the honest emotion, and like Sue was expressing, the honest emotion with which these stories are written, we didn't whitewash the dynamics because a family is a family, and it's fraught with all kinds of issues. And I think those show up in the book as well.
And they seem very personal and very unique. And yet when you look at them in the totality of a book like this, you realize the overlap and the commonalities.
Yeah. And, you know, Carl Rogers, the psychologist, says the most personal of our stories is the most universal.
Right.
And I think that was true. And the sisterhood that's developed among these authors, they didn't know each other before their stories became compiled. And we brought them together for the launch. And they're sending emails to each other saying, love you and see you soon. And it's been an amazing sisterhood.
Now you're part of the club.
It has been created, yes.
So how many of you will be at the Bat and Kill book event on Thursday night at 7 o'clock?
There will be five authors and Pat.
Excellent.
And we have a guest appearance by a local musician, Bob Warren, who will be singing an original song about Susan B. Anthony.
Oh, Bob. I ran into Bob over the weekend. He was telling me about it. Mm-hmm. He had a great event at Hubbard Hall, so it would be very nice to have him be a part of this as well. Bat and Kill Books in Cambridge, New York, batandkillbooks.com to find out more about the event, but it takes place Thursday at 7 o'clock in Cambridge, Bat and Kill Books in Cambridge, batandkillbooks.com. The name of the book is Before They Were Our Mothers. It is a beautiful volume. Before They Were Our Mothers, Voices of Women Born Before Rosie Started Riveting. My thanks to Pat and Sue and Crystal. Thank you for sharing your stories, and thank you for this beautiful work. And we look forward to the event on Thursday night.
Thanks so much,
Joe.
Great pleasure.
I would just add, it's Susan B. Anthony's birthday on Thursday, which is how we chose
what better way
the
to
date
celebrate
for the occasion at Bat and Kill Books.
Terrific. batandkillbooks.com. Again, the name of the book, Before They Were Our Mothers. You're listening to The Roundtable.